Hey everybody, I'm Alex and this is Lunchbox Radio. Now before we get started on what we're talking about today proper, I wanted to thank everybody who's been listening to the podcast. We are very close to having 100,000 listens just of all time, which makes me very happy because I never thought that anybody would ever want to listen to anything I say about anything, much less about cartoons from Japan on the internet 100,000 times. It's very cool to have that be a thing. So if you have friends who you think might like to listen to this, get them. Get them and make them listen. We can do it. We can get to 100,000. We can make this happen. But on that note, I definitely, if you haven't listened to the podcast about Bullet Train, which is the live-action movie starring Brad Pitt that recently came out, I think, last Friday? Or the episode all about the merger of Crunchyroll and Crunchyroll, and the big deal anime shop online, Write Stuff Anime, called Sunday Edition Wrong Stuff. I encourage you to go listen to both of those. If you want a pretty in-depth conversation about the Write Stuff merger that's just got more knowledge packed into it than I was able to provide, mostly because I was in full anti-capitalist Alex mode, go flying off the handle, because it does not take much imagination to see how that was bad for the industry, how that's bad for the industry and bad for us, the fans, ultimately. And hilariously, I think that it has been mostly received as like a net bad in the world of anime, which I think is fair. But if you want a more in-depth kind of conversational thing about it, give the latest episode of Anime World Order a try. And if you're listening to me and you haven't listened to Anime World Order before, you're welcome first. And how did you get here, honestly? But on that note, let's jump into what we're talking about today. And that's a little movie called Inuo.
憧れになるその前に飛び込まなくては今時放つけももが眠りつく前に俺の名は友な。お前の名は？俺には泣かない。
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I am an actual creative person in the world. Like, I make money with my creative skill and talent. One of the many things that, not a liberal arts degree, not like a community college communication program, like an actual art school degree gets you is this kind of exploration of multiple cultures, multiple perspective points in culture, and all this other stuff, because it's part of what is considered to be a full education in the arts. And hilariously in art school, one of the running jokes of art school grads like me is, we go to art school because there's no math and there's no gym. And there's no real academics. Aside from one, and that is a kind of a writing and literature thing. And in my writing and lit course, one of the things that we did was we read, not the whole, we didn't read like the whole Bible or the whole Quran or the whole Bhagavad Gita, but we read select passages from all of them that really represented that, like, each cultural place they were coming from. And as part of that, we ended up reading a little bit of traditional No stories. And I'm not going to lie, like, that, having that knowledge helped me in this movie, and also being pretty steeped in anime and seeing how No theater and No stories have affected the way anime portrays things helps when you go to see this. If this comes out on Netflix, like, 3 weeks later or something. But let's get into Inuo, as it is. So Inuo is the latest film from Misaki Yuasa and his studio Sciensaru. And they've really turned out some bangers. I mean, if you don't follow Yuasa and you don't follow Sciensaru, Sciensaru is responsible for some really phenomenal work. Mostly, they are responsible for work on, like, big budget titles. We're talking things like Ping Pong the Animation. We're talking things like, and actually this will come into play in my thoughts about Inuo, Hikei Monogatari. They did a bunch of beautiful stuff for Star Wars Visions alongside other greats like Studio Trigger. They also did the last movie I saw in theaters with my friend Kie. Hi, Kie. Before the pandemic, and that was Ride Your Wave. They also did They also did Aizokun. The list kind of goes on because, they did one of my kind of like favorite, like, almost anime mumblecore movies I call it an anime mumblecore movie called The Night Is Short, Walk On, Girl. And they're doing a really, I haven't dived into it yet, although with my interest in VR, I definitely will. They're doing currently this season Yuri Deco, which is all about a world that is essentially a VR world that is governed by likes and hearts and stuff like that. So they have this track record of doing these really beautiful films, of doing really beautiful, really visually arresting work that is less about the anime aesthetic, although it's certainly there, and more about a raw appreciation for animation. And I don't want to say that, like, no anime studio loves animation, but so much of the anime styling and the styling of the genre of anime has a pretty distinct look. Has a look that you would probably recognize. And one of the ways to stand out, and one of the ways Sciensaru has found to stand out, is that they are purposely not producing that look in many cases. And what that means is you have a much freer style that runs closer to, like, American animators, in some cases like Bill Plimpton, or American animation, like really experimental American animation, really experimental animation in general. Like you watch things and you see moments of the Triplets of Belleville in some of their work. You see like a sketchy, super expressive artistry to the kind of animation that they're choosing to do. And this translates to Inuo beautifully. And it also gives them... it gives them the ability to tackle things in a way that other studios don't, because they are trying to produce this... And I'm not saying either way is right or wrong, but Science-Saru stands out because it's so purposeful in its stylization. That gives Science-Saru the ability to tackle things from a much freer standpoint many times than you would imagine from a studio like that still produces incredibly beautiful things. From a studio that's like, say, like Studio Sunrise. Like, if you look at Gundam Hathaway, which is... if you haven't seen Gundam Hathaway and you have a Netflix subscription, literally, what are you doing? Turn this off. Go watch Gundam Hathaway. Have you not seen Gundam? It doesn't matter. It's one of the most beautiful things on Netflix. It is jaw-droppingly stunning. And jaw-droppingly atmospheric. But it also looks the way you expect a ultra-high budget, throw all the money at it anime to look. It gets into that, like, Princess Mononoke territory of look and feel. And Science-Saru is clearly like a bunch of artists who just look, who just get their hands on money and then just immediately light piles of money on fire and go insane with their own creativity. And I think one of Yuasa's real talents is taking all of that and focusing it and making it all feel cohesive to itself. If you look at something like Devilman Crybaby, which is also his, it is certainly an anime. It is probably one of the more traditional anime-looking things he's produced, but it's also, it's like so visually arresting. It manages to do the kind of end-of-world aesthetic that Evangelion does, but it also does it with like a creative flair and like a joy for creation that is, that you don't get in something like Eva, because Eva is so concerned, even the new Eva movies are so concerned with like generating a feeling in you that they are very committed to these like static, to these very static looking images. And you can in most cases in a show like Eva, you can pause Eva and it will give you a good frame. In Inuo, you have a more traditional squash, and in Inuo and lots of Misaki Yuasa's work, you have a lot more like squash and stretch feel. You have a lot more traditional animation feel. His pencil test will not look like the pencil test at the end of Eva 3.0 plus 1.0. His pencil test will look much sketchier. They will still be beautiful, but they'll be much more of an artist's sketchbook instead of a perfectionist sketchbook. Because if you look at one of the things that people hate about Eva, the original series, is they hate the ending. And they hate the ending because, like, it screams that they didn't have enough budget. And that was true. But also, it was a complete idea, and one of Anno's biggest regrets is that the fandom turned on him
when he presented not like an all budget, no hold bar idea to end,
but when he ended it in a more quiet, less bombastic way. And so when he went to end his, you know, foursome of movies, he did something similar. He did a pencil test move, but it feels really self-aware. It feels really calculated. It feels really controlled, because clearly he has the money and he is making the same choice he kind of made with the first Ava, but he's making it more intentionally and he's making it with way more control. And that's partly that's him being like, fuck you, I ended it the way I wanted. But with Sayantaro and Misaki Yuasa, they're very clearly making these creative choices under no duress of budget or anything. They are making these creative choices because that's the choice they want to make. That's the styling they want to do for each film. And if you look at their film, they all feel similar, but they don't quite stylily match up. If you look at his film, The Night is Short, Walk On Girl, it looks very different than In UO. And the reason why I'm saying all this is because I went to see a movie. It was visually incredible and it was absolutely amazing. And then I actually subscribed to the New York Times because I'm an East Coast asshole. Take for that what you will, I guess. And I read the review, and they talked about the story and how the story got lost and how the story, like, good luck following the story if you haven't read the source material. And the source material is actually not a manga, it's a novel, and the novel, as far as anyone knows, I think, doesn't have an English translation currently, which means that you can't go read the source material to understand the thing that they very clearly cut from this. And my guess is they cut it for A, time, and B, you know, interest in a potential audience. Because what they do with this is they find, and this is often true of most of many adaptations of any kind, if they find really the story they want to tell, and they really drive it home. So the story that they want to tell is actually not so much about Inuo. Inuo is the character that the story ends on, but he's not the character largely that the story takes as your perspective character. And it's very careful to remind you at a point that your perspective character was Tomona and Tomona comes from a small village, called Dan no Ora, and it's a small fishing village, but it was also the site of this big battle of the Hike clan against a different clan in ancient Japanese myth and history. And much of no theater and what this film is actually about, which is no's, like, which is the thing that no come from and the thing that no was before it turned into exactly what it is now, is a combination of myth, legend, and history. And it's all linked together, and it usually has some core principle it wants to talk about. Whether that be greed, whether that be lust, whether that means discrimination, something like that. It usually has like a core moral it's trying to impart. A great modern-ish example of this is if you've ever watched any of, like, even an episode of Dororo, the story originally penned by Osamu Tezuka, that, and a lot of Tezuka's works are functionally kind of like no stories, for the reason they can have strong moral bad in them that is like indescribably evil. And Dororo shares a lot of DNA with the Inuo property in general. And so one of the things that this story starts with is it starts with a kind of rough telling of Japan being split in two, and there being two emperors fighting over who's the real emperor. And the emperors want to find these ancient mystical relics. And you see, and the story actually opens up on our objective main character, Tomona. And Tomona is diving, and he's diving for fish and crabs and stuff, and that's his family's business. So he dives for fish and crabs, and he brings them up, and he sells them. And one day he's diving, and he comes up, and everybody's gathered around his family's residence and fish market, and he runs in, and it's these two members of the noble court of one of the shoguns, and they say, "We're looking for this thing. Can you dive and find it?" And the father says, "Yeah, sure. Me and my son will do this." And it's this mystical sword that supposedly exists, but nobody's seen it. And the movie opens with this image of a mother and son, like, strapped to a box and being thrown into the sea. And plunging down to the depths of the sea. Tomona and his father find this sword. And the two imperial court guys, they open it, and Tomona's father draws the sword, and there's a big flash of light that illustrates this big ring of light all the way along the horizon. And all of a sudden, Tomona's father is dead, and Tomona is rendered blind, permanently blind. Now, I want to point something out here. This is not what happens in Dororo. We'll get to what happens in Dororo. But this is a father taking a job and it fucks up. He had no ill will aimed at his son. And you and through the show's treatment of his like ghost who follows Tomona around, later, you find out that he loves his son, and like he, even in the afterlife, he's trying to, like, illuminate guideposts for his son not to fuck it up. And so Tomona is rendered blind. His father is dead, and his mother is like, "What the fuck happened? Why is my husband dead and my kid blind? What the fuck?" And the Imperial Court guys takes a sword and leave. And that will illustrate kind of, and this is true of a lot of, no stories, is that will illustrate kind of the Imperial Court and the Emperor's role in this story. They are unfeeling. They're unfeeling, self-serving rulers who see the people as a useful thing, as a asset to be used, but not really truly cared for, if that makes any sense. And eventually, Tomina's mother says, "You have to find a purpose. Like, you're blind, but go find a purpose." And so he starts wandering. He becomes a blind wanderer. And eventually, he becomes part of this group of Biwa monks. And they are these monks who are largely blind, who play a Biwa, which is essentially like a big old lute, big old Japanese, I think it's 4-string lute. And they tell these tales. And at this point, No is like taking shape, and it's got a different name. I forget what the name of it is. What the name of the performance art? What the name of No was for? Got fell on No storytelling. But these Biwa monks oftentimes accompany a flute player and dancers who perform for the Imperial Court or the Emperor. And there are this rigid set of stories about the Hikei and about the fall of the Hikei. And much of true kind of Japanese tradition, much of No is about perfecting the performance of these stories. It's not about creating new stories, it's about perfecting the performance of the stories that as they exist. And the Emperor is a huge fan of No, and it seems like he has very illicit affairs with the young men who are the dancers. It seems pretty clear. But he also, like, he has these young men and boys perform for him, and like, he has his favorite troupe, and his favorite troupe is favored by the court, so they have a good life. But here's where we run into the comparison to Dororo, and the comparison to, like, No as a larger storytelling tool. Is much of what No deals with, and much of what yokai stories, which are in many ways related to No stories, deal with. They deal with a element that functions in a way kind of like the devil, in that these elements prey on specific people's desires to achieve something that is not worth the effort that the monkey paw curling that occurs for it to be achieved. And in Dororo, what Dororo's father ultimately does is he trades his son's all but life for the prosperity of his to a like hall of fucking demons, I'm not kidding, for the prosperity of his prefecture, since he's the lord of a rural prefecture. And the story of Dororo is almost entirely about Dororo going on a journey and being helped to go on that journey and gaining his body and life back from those demons who were given his body and life by his father before he was born. In Inuo's case, what his father traded Inuo's like physical normal being for is is the ability to perform like the perfect no performance. And the ability to gather new stories about the Hike. And what that means is and this is all presented in a really, I'm doing a much more linear version of this than it was presented in. This is presented in bits and pieces, and the movie is really straight up telling you, like, take all these pieces and fit and complete the puzzle. But we trust that you're, and I love this movie for this, we trust that you're smart enough to rearrange this timeline and see where it makes sense. What he ends up having to do is, what Inyo's father ends up having to do is kill these Biwa monks. Because what this evil no mask tells him is, there are other stories of the Hike gotten from the village of Hike survivors by these blind Biwa monks. Each monk carries their own story. Go find them and take their lives and their story. And so he does. And he gets more stories that are apocryphal, that can add to the canon. So what he basically did was he made a deal with the devil to have a creative font that he can drain in exchange for turning his own son into a monster. And they never show you the full, I think this is actually good. They never show you his, like, Inuo's full grotesque form. They let you understand it, but they don't let you, they let you accept it, but they don't let you understand it, which I think is a really great touch for this movie. And so, on one hand, you have the Imperial Court reaching out to a random fishing village, which is already the site of, like, a massive slaughter in history, and essentially destroying a family. And on the other hand, you have the Imperial Court setting up a scenario in which a father sacrifices his son so he can remain in the good graces of the court. Which is really what he does. And yes, he's, you know, selfish and unconcerned with the consequences and all that stuff. But he is given a ability to readily trade his son's future for his present, and he hopes his future. And from then on, Inuo is kind of is an ugly outcast who lives but isn't allowed to live isn't allowed to prosper the way he would if he was like a normal kid. If it was a normal child of this family, he would be part of this no group, and he would inherit his father's, you know, he would inherit his father's business, he would inherit his father's performance troupe. But it's telling in his father's self, like, narcissism and self-centeredness that his father was like, and they show this pretty late in the movie, his father was like, take him, just take him. Absolutely, I will give you my firstborn. Take him. Don't need him. And what Inuo is unaware of is that he is surrounded by the spirits of the Hike, who have their own stories to tell. And Tomina ultimately changes his name to, like, basically be able to work as a Biwa monk. And his father pleads with him, no, please don't change your name. I won't be able to find you as a spirit if you change your name. Tomina does it anyway. And Tomina eventually encounters Inuo on a bridge. And Inuo keeps his face hidden behind this, like, what they call a ground mask, but really looks like a flat gourd with, like, two eye holes at, like, very different places than eyes should be. It bears a kind of an almost similarity to the kind of mask that Madara wears as Tabi and Naruto Shippuden. But Tomina is blind, so a lot of Inuo's issues, almost all of Inuo's issues are visual. He is still a functioning human. Like, he looks horrific, I'm sure, under all the things he uses to hide himself, but he's got an arm that's so long it trailed behind him like the scarf from that video game, Dandara. And he's got legs that are uneven. But there's a moment right before he meets Tomina, where he's trying to practice the dance that they're doing for his family's, that his father's trying to perfect with very little success, in his no troop, in his young no troop, dancers. And when Inuo perfects it, all of a sudden you see this, like, gathering of almost red fireflies, and his short leg grows to the length of his other leg. And that's your first cue of what's about to happen. So this is where the story really starts to, like, this is where the story clearly starts to fall away, is what I'll say. It's after Tomina and Inuo meet, the traditional story trappings of this fall away. And what I've already told you is presented in a way less linear fashion, and it's presented all over the place than it's presented in the film. But this is where the story in the film starts to, like, be shaky. But it's also where the film really starts to hit its visual stride. And one of the things they said in the New York Times article that I mentioned earlier, which I might link to, is after a while the reviewers stopped caring about the story. It was just like, you do not go see this movie for the story. You're not going to understand it unless you know anything about No and, like, the, like, treatments of morality in No theater. You're going to see it because it's beautiful. He did say that sometimes it was a little repetitive feeling, but at all times it was visually stunning. And both of those are true. There's a little bit of a repetitiveness just because of the passage of time and the way the story is told, but it's always just dripping style and beauty and, like, excellent composition and visual storytelling. And it's an incredible looking thing. In much the same way that, if we're going to reference a different powerhouse director and studio, in much the same way that Paprika is just absolutely visually gorgeous and arresting, this film is. So after Inuo and Tomina meet, the film does a not great job of illustrating a time skip. And illustrating the fact that after the initial, like, jam session that Inuo and Tomina have on the bridge, where Inuo is like, can you play that Biwa? And he's like, absolutely. And he plays, and Tomino sees through his ears, basically. Inuo dance. They become fast friends. And the reason they become fast friends is because, and this is another reason I love this movie, they are both disabled. Only over time, what happens is a kind of reversal of the, like, relationship of their disabilities to each other. So, when Inuo and Tomino first meet, Inuo is the less socially acceptable form of disabled. He is the more physically disabled. Tomino is just blind. He is otherwise a totally healthy, functional person. By the end of this movie, that has flipped because Inuo has told all his stories of the Hike and regained his body back and is now this, like, beautiful specimen of a human. And Tomino is still blind and still committed to doing what they had wanted to do in the first place. And by the end of the movie, the Emperor and the Imperial Court have twisted the screws in the way that only they can to ensure a tragic ending. But we're not there yet. So what they proceed, so after they've been friends for a while, Tomino hears Inuo singing one day and he's inspired. And they basically have a conversation that goes something along the lines of, like, why aren't you performing? And he's like, because my dad won't let me, because I don't know if you noticed, I'm kind of a freak and I don't know why. And then he remembers that Tomino has had experiences seeing his father as a spirit, and he says, you can see spirits. Do I have any around me? And Tomino, having changed his name to a name that's not really important right now, said, like, reached out to his father. His father finds him and is like, oh, thank God I found you again after you changed your name, you dumbass. He's like, does my friend Inuo have any spirits around him? And that's when you see all these, and this is the accidental genius of anime in some cases. If you see these little red dancing, like, kind of like fire-like spirits, and they feel along the same lines as the Kodama from Princess Mononoke. They feel like you can sell a keychain of these motherfuckers and they will be collectible. And it's great. And these spirits are the spirits that Inuo gets the untold stories of the Hike from. And so what Tomino and Inuo start doing is they put together these massive and really pretty elaborate street performances where Tomino, who changes the name to Tominari, which translates to we are, is the kind of, like, rock and roller promoter, sex god biwa player who spins this tale about this deformed monster who's regaining his, and it spins this truth, he tells the story of this deformed monster who's regaining his humanity by sharing the untold stories of the fallen Hike. And Inuo, under the bridge, has this whole elaborate setup in which, like, they make a point of showing that, like, there's, like, a whole circus troupe involved in making these things go absolutely perfectly and absolutely awesomely. And Inuo is performing these like rock opera stage pieces all about the like traditional no stories that no one at this point has heard. And what ultimately ends up happening is people leave those old crusty no stories and they like go to the bridge on Saturday night and they rock out. And each time they finish telling a story, and this is part of the sales pitch that now Tominari, formerly Tomina, like tells them in his like awesome, you know, rock and roll way, is each time Inuo finished telling a story, he gains another part of his body back as it was always supposed to be. And this all bubbles to a head, ultimately, because the, like, this is like a, they have made themselves into absolute rock stars, and they have made themselves into, like, they made themselves into, like, rock and roll idols, almost. And so, like, they've had, like, lunch with bureaucrats, they've, like, hung out with all these people, and, like, they both changed and not changed. But the entire time they have remained committed to telling these stories they start to understand, not shared about the Hikei, because the Hikei was losers. And the thing about history, and this is always true, history is largely written by the winners. And the stories of the Hikei are certainly not government sanctioned, and the emperor start to direct the imperial court like, we can't have this. We can't have public theater for the masses. That shit's for me. And he gets really in a huff, but his wife is so enthralled by what she's heard about, you know, Tominari and the, like, rogue performer of her husband's favorite theater troupe, who went out and started his own thing. She wants them to perform. So, the emperor invites them to perform for his wife, which is just not an uncommon super rich thing to do. Like, oh, my wife really likes you, but I don't like you. Let's get you in here, scuffle you out, and like make you sign a thing on your way out that accidentally makes it so you can never perform again. But what Inuo's own father does is he ends up saying, like, the only... And he sees Inuo changing back this entire time. Like, all of a sudden, his, like, weird little gremlin hobgoblin of a kid is now this full-grown man with, like, a beautifully sculpted Italianate sculpture of a body. And by that point in the movie, the only thing left is that he's wearing a mask, because his face is the last thing that has to change back. And by all accounts, by Inuo's understanding and by Tominari / Tomina's understanding of what the fuck is happening here, if he performs, his face will change back by the end and he'll be able to take his mask off. So when Inuo's father is like, the only thing is, you have to take your mask off in the performance, as part of the performance. Inuo's like, yeah, fine. And they had this like luncheon scene where they're like eating with bureaucrats, and at that point you see Inuo is the like very, he's the social one of the two. In this friendship, he's the, like, extrovert, like, we'll talk to you, we'll drink with you, the whole nine. But
Tominari's off to the side, like, yeah, he's this big, sexy rocker guy, but he's doing this with and for his friend. He's doing this as kind of a way to rage against a world that has taken advantage of him since he was, like, 7, basically. And a world that has scarred him in a way that he will never get back. But he became friends with and found a way to help someone who could get something back from this world that has fucked him over. And you really feel that in that moment when they're still, like, best friends and, like, Tominari does not care about, like, drinking with the bigwigs, but, like, as soon as he's like, nah, I'm cool, I don't really need a drink, Inuyo's like, ah, it's cool, I'll just hang out here with you then. You seem, like, so much more fun than those assholes who didn't give me a time of day when I still had scales on my back and a furry ape chest. And it's just, like, the whole movie has this unyielding, beautiful friendship that in no way ever is one not considering the other. Even in moments when they believe, when one believes the other isn't considering them, that is purposeful on behalf of outside parties. So we draw to the last performance of the show. And the last performance of the show is very different. It is unlike anything else that they've done before. It is big. It is Tominari and Inuo on stage together performing. And it's this big beautiful ballet sequence. And Inuo realizes his face isn't changing. And now he has to take his mask off. And now he realizes the trap that was about to happen to him, which is that they wanted him to take his mask off so that he frightened the pregnant empress enough where it was deemed, and she lost the baby, and it was deemed a capital offense, and they'd be put to death. And then the emperor's problem would be solved. And this was his father's plan, and the emperor's plan, key point. Because with his own son out of his way, the emperor would be free, Inuo's father would be free to be the talk of the royal court again. He would regain his status, which he had lost through Inuo just kicking ass and taking names and being an absolute fucking rock star. And his father's a petty piece of shit. And that's, once again, more shared DNA through the concept of, like, no theater with a story like Dororo from Tezuka. But what they both quickly realize is that there is another story they can tell. There is a last story they can tell. A last story of the Hikei they can perform. And that's their story. That's the story of the performers who have kind of, like, given their lives over to this cause of performing these untold tales. And in doing so, they expose Inuo's father and kind of the royal court, which isn't going to be hurt by this, but Inuo's father will, as the thing that they are, and as the self-serving kind of douchebags that they are. And in this moment, Inuo's father turns back to the evil No Mask, who he made a deal with to give Inuo to to gain the story of the Hike that he now had become famous for performing. And this is the thing. This is the monkey paw of it. This is the robot devil of it. The no mask is like, you want me to kill the child, your child, who you gave to me, because he's not doing because he's doing something that threatens your fame. And without hesitation, Inyo's father is like, abso-fucking-lutely, end him now. And Nomad is like, nope. This time it's you. And just paints the walls with the guy. And he's removed as a problem. He's like, absolutely gone. Just like, splatter gore all over the walls. And you realize that was the Nomad's goal. And the Nomad disappears. And then we get to the true sadness of the story. And the true... And then we get to the true core moral of the story, in case you didn't get it from Don't Be a Shitbag. In case you didn't get enough moral from Don't Be a Shitbag to your own family for your own gain, because it will always fuck you in the end. In that, when Inuo takes his mask off, his face is magically better. And having not worked, the Imperial Court does the thing that you can do to silence dissent in a real understandable way. Is that he invites Inuo to become a performer for the Emperor. And Inuo is like, absolutely. I would love to. It's the recognition I never got from my father. I will absolutely take his motherfucking job. And then you get a scene a little later on with a court where the Emperor says, you are an unbelievably talented performer, beautiful in every way. But I'm gonna need you to stop performing your story. The stories that are not in the official record. And he's like, and what if I don't? And instantly Inyo is like, yeah, what if I don't fucking feel like it? And this is the real insidiousness of this movie. And this is the real insidiousness of this movie all along. The Emperor simply says, then it would be a shame what could happen to all of your friends. To your friend. To that Tominari boy. And Inuo instantly realizes what's happening. He instantly understands what's standing in front of him. What's standing in front of him is a choice that only the people of privilege can have the right to offer or make or truly make. It is either you keep performing your stories and we kill everyone you love, or you stop performing your stories, never speak to them, and they are safe for the rest of their days, unless they fuck it up. And Inuo instantly is like, this can't be a hard choice. I choose my friend's life. And he cuts ties with Tominari, essentially abandoning him for his own good. But Tominari isn't ready to give it up. He wanted to do the thing with his friend, with his best friend. And eventually, he changes his name back to Tomina of Dan No Aura.
And he changes his name back to Tomino of Dan Noora because he realizes that name represents the truth. That was not... That he let the world slowly strip away from him. It represents the truth about a young boy whose family was taken advantage of by the people in power. It represents the source of a kind of evil. And what I haven't said till now, I'm going to kind of end on, and the thing that the New York Times article, like, brought up a couple times now, keeps focusing on, is this sword. Once that sword is plucked from the sea and kills Tominari's father and blind Tominari, it's just kind of like assumed, like, oh, this is definitely a holy relic sheathed, and it's like put on display and nobody fucking touches it. But occasionally throughout the movie, they'll pan back to it shaking and crying blood as a kind of omen. And it seems to do that when there is something claimed by either party. It does that when, you know, when they claim the stories. It does that when the emperor claims, like, rights over people he shouldn't. And it's this kind of visual indicator of shifts in time, and it shifts in the story in which way the fortune is being favored. And that's not an uncommon motif in anime. It's not even an uncommon motif in animation. If you look at Beauty and the Beast, the rose in Beauty and the Beast that's losing its petals is used in a similar way. But the visual storytelling in this film is top-notch. It's really incredible. If you have the opportunity to go see this in a theater or a really big projection, I encourage you to go do it. I don't know how much longer it's playing or where it's, or if it's playing by you. I know that I went to Into the City specifically to see it, and the theater was not packed. But I also saw this movie, and I thought, like, this is G-Kid's thing. Like, G-Kid's also put this out, I should be clear. G-Kid's has a history at this point of putting out beautiful pieces of animation. They put out Sarutobi Mizuhakusei. They put out The Secret of Kells. They put out pieces of animation filmmaking that are kind of the best in their class in some way. And that has inevitably taken them to lots of anime films. They put out Pompo the Cinephile. And they have this commitment to animation as an art form that is really excellent to see. And with putting this movie out, they've kind of strengthened their bona fides, as far as I'm concerned, because this film is in so many ways in conversation with the medium of animation as an art form. There's a very pretty, in like the last performance of the movie, in the last like musical performance of the movie, there is a visual of a dragon flying across multiple panes of an open Japanese estate. And it so feels like the first animatic of a horse running that, like, if you know your animation history, you instantly see it. And you instantly see this appreciation of animation as an art form and
a storytelling medium that it can be really easy to forget about in the, like, weekly shuffle of simulcast, in the understanding that animation is an art form that is pretty thoroughly commercialized. And it's, I think one of the beautiful things about this movie and about its story, even if its story is certainly flawed, is that it's about the want to decommercialize an art form and the fight against the, like, control and commercialization of it all. And I think that's pretty important. Call me a weirdo art school kid, but I think that's pretty important. On that note, if you like this episode, new episodes of the podcast come out every Thursday and every other Sunday. So you will be getting a new Sunday edition this Sunday, since this is the second Thursday edition in the row, which means you get a Sunday edition. I'm thinking about doing my Sunday edition this Sunday about IPs and about brands in anime, which, if you're like, what does he mean? You'll find out when you get there. But just know, it has a lot to do with Dragon Ball Z showing up in Fortnite. On that note, I've been Alex. This has been Lunchbox Radio. I will talk to you on Sunday.
これより新しい物語を始めたいと存じます。
新作？
気味悪い。
泣く子も黙る氷炭じゃ。
伊能の巻を知らんのか。
ひどい器量らしい。
この手を外すとどうなる？
ほーれ
ー、見えないのだ。
俺の名は友奈。
実はもう決めてある。
決めた？自分でか。
比叡山の舞台にその名をとどろかす。
実相天外、噂の舞台、
滝あり山あり川ありの犬王の巻。
つられて踊る
犬王や。
俺たちはここにあるだ。美を極めるにはまだ。
プリオン、プリスナーの物語。
今こそ名乗れ。
あいつらの挑発は何じゃ。
金輪際ビュアフォースと会うな。
別の勢力が広がるのは困るのだ。
俺たちが暴れれば暴れるほどこいつらも。
まるで種だな。呪い。
まだ拾えていない、拾えてない話。
俺たちはここにあるだろ。
ともあり、知ってほしいんだよ、
自分たちがこの世にいたことを。